Folks, hi there. This is Elvin Shamroff here once again. Welcome to our bi-weekly teleconference. And for those of you that are regulars will have heard this introduction before. Please forgive me. We get new people coming in, joining throughout the year. So for those of you that are new, the way it works is we have today two folks who have submitted some questions via email for me to address, and I received them earlier today, and we're going to discuss them, and one of them has asked to remain anonymous, which we'll see if we can encourage them to participate actively. Because it makes it more realistic and more valuable. In any case, the teleseminar is unscripted, totally unscripted, and you will notice I will never mention the candidate's last name. And I want you folks to be totally comfortable and free to volunteer to be on the hot seat. And you don't need to worry about not knowing the answer to a question that I might ask and being embarrassed in front of all your colleagues listening in. That's not the case. You remain anonymous throughout. So with that out of the way, let's see if our active participants are with us. The first one is Paige. Paige, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey. Hi, thank you so much, Paige, and thank you for volunteering and welcome. And the other person is anonymous. You don't need to give your name, but is the person who submitted a question to my office and who gave his or her name as anonymous, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. My first
Anyone?
Name is Tina.
Tina, thank you so much. I appreciate that, and it'll make it that much easier to have the conversation. So, perfect. We can get straight on with it. Paige, let's start with you since you're first on my email that I got. I've got the question that you posed, but for the sake of everyone listening in, please share with us your question, your issue, and let's talk about it.
So I had a question about which patients to include on my obstetrics case list. Patients that I might have admitted inpatient for antepartum management but did not then go on to deliver them, either because they delivered later by my partner or have not delivered yet, and if those cases should be included.
So virtually everyone listening in has this question. The issue, if there are two actually scenarios to your question. One is you admit the patient, and 2 days later or later on that day, she gets delivered, but not by you, by one of your colleagues. Does that patient go on your list? The short answer is you did not do the delivery, so she doesn't go on your list. Now, if and many of you have heard me suggest this before, if it happens to be a particularly interesting case, perhaps a patient with lupus, a cardiac patient, and you want to talk about it because you know the case well, you know the subject matter well, you can impress your examiner on it, then put that case down. You're giving ABOG an extra case that's not necessary. I have no problem with you giving ABOG more than they request. I have a serious issue with giving them less. Make sure you don't leave off any cases that should be on. But if you want to add a case for the reasons that I mentioned a moment ago that does not have to be on, go ahead and do that, but with one proviso. This, strictly speaking, is not a necessary case. And so, as such, if you've only got 20 cases that count towards that minimum of 20, this case doesn't truly count, so you've actually only got 19. So, and that's a problem. So go ahead and use the extra case. If you feel it's a really interesting case, the examiner will appreciate asking you questions on it. Go ahead and put it down, but make sure you've got more than 20 cases that count. That's the only point I'm making. Or that you're not relying on this case to be one of those 20. That's the first potential response to your question, Paige. The second response, what happens if you admit a patient at 10 weeks of gestation, for example, with hyperemesis or UTI, pyelonephritis in pregnancy? Or you admit her at 28 weeks, 30 weeks for third trimester bleeding. And then she goes home, in whichever case, the third trimester bleeding, she might stay in hospital for a long time until she delivers. But let's talk about the other two and those cases of first trimester bleeding where she goes home still pregnant and then gets admitted subsequently for her delivery. In those cases, you admitted her for a non-deliverable admission. And if you've admitted a patient for a non-deliverable admission, you should put her down. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because 95% of the decision-making is made at the time of admission. And if you admit her, you're the one who really planned out the course of treatment for her. So it's appropriate that you should put it down. So, Paige, does that answer your question thus far? Or is there still some aspect that I haven't addressed?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure that it was important to include antepartum admissions, and it's okay to leave the delivery section of the case list blank for those patients.
Correct, and you can also grant, if you want, in the delivery column, you can write discharge pregnant or delivery with subsequent admission. That's totally fine. You're explaining to the examiner what transpired. They will infer that already by the fact that there's no information in the neonatal data. You know, it's just absent there. So, yeah, it's not a problem at all. Paige, did you have any other question or questions that you wanted to ask?
Yes, I had one more. If I have a patient mm-hmm. that I delivered that was mine and she had multiple different antepartum admissions, should those be separate case list entries or all under one that includes her delivery?
The short answer is all under one delivery. There are rare exceptions. It happens to happen more on the GYN side, ironically, than on the OB side, where you may want to put a patient down twice for separate issues. She may come in, for example, for a tubal ligation, and then 10 months later is found to have an adnexal mass. They're completely unrelated. There are other ways that this kind of situation can arise. But in the OB patient, especially, if you've got multiple admissions, two or more, in most cases, the patient is typically admitted to the same hospital. So once that happens, you really are supposed to put it down as just one entry. And I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. If she was admitted to two hospitals, You've got two medical record numbers. You've got to put them down under separate hospital groups, and so that the patient has to appear twice. And in that situation, what I recommend to you to be totally open and honest, and not let ABOG or your examiner think that you're trying to cause some nonsense going on. Let's say the two cases are case number 7 and case number 32. Anywhere, maybe even in the complications column, you write on case number 7, same patient as case number 32. And likewise on case number 32, you write same patient as case number 7. So again, you're being totally open and honest, and there's really no issue whatsoever. Let's come back to the case where you've got multiple or just two or more admissions to the same hospital. Typically, they will all revolve around the same medical issue, but that's not guaranteed. So what you do, you write, for example, you write down the case for her last deliverable admission. Now, let's say she had 2, 3, or 4 admissions antepartum. In the antepartum complications column, you write multiple admissions or admissions times 3 at 16, 18, and 22 weeks for whatever, okay? But just abbreviate it tremendously. You want to be able to accomplish two things. Number one, you need to be clear with your examiner and not be seen to be trying to hide something. You need to be seen to be clear that you're acknowledging this patient had some complications and what was admitted multiple times. And you also want to put enough as little information as you can get away with regarding those admissions, but you do want at the very least to put a couple of words down that will pique your examiner's curiosity as to what was happening with one of those admissions, because if it's an admission that you want to talk about and you're comfortable to have that conversation, then you want to pique your examiner's curiosity. You want them to ask you questions that will clarify their curiosity. So I'll give you a silly example, because it would occur postpartum probably more than antepartum. But let's say she was admitted because she had a PE. I'm just choosing it. So I would write, let's say she had a PE, but you want to talk about cardiac issues in pregnancy. Or let's do it the other way around. She was admitted because she had mitral stenosis, for example, and she went into cardiac failure. But you want to talk about PE. So I would write in the antepartum complications column, admitted 14 weeks shortness of breath. Because once the examiner reads that, he or she has to ask you what really happened here. What was going on? What happened? And once they ask that, One of the first questions they will ask you is, what was your differential diagnosis? And once you get that question, you can take the examiner down the PE road very easily. You know, I would answer the following way. There were a couple of considerations as far as etiology is concerned. For example, cardiac, amniotic fluid, embolism. But the biggest concern that I had at the time was that she had a pulmonary embolus. And once you say that, they either will ask you or you just carry on and say, because she presented with ABC, I was worried about a DVT. You can guide the conversation in any direction you want. So I'm giving a long-winded answer, but you've got a beautiful opportunity here where you've got an extra one or more admissions antenatally. You've got an excellent opportunity to introduce a conversation to a large extent of your choosing. Paige, does that make sense to you or not really?
Yes.
Be honest.
Thank
you.
You
can say you don't have a clue what I'm talking about. I can handle
no,
that.
It
don't
does.
Worry about it.
Thank you.
You're okay. It makes sense to you.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Before we move on, any other questions that you may have, Paige?
So if you had a couple of antepartum admissions that you felt like were different and could benefit to be listed separately, for example, a patient.
Yeah, give me the exact example.
Yeah, so a patient that's admitted a couple of times early in pregnancy for hyperemesis, and then later in the pregnancy develops preeclampsia with severe features and is admitted and then delivered with that admission. Would those be okay to separate, or should they still be included as one patient?
So I love your question, because folks, listen to what's going on here. There's an admission for preeclampsia with severe features. That's got its own conversation. There's also a potential to have a hyperemesis conversation. So what I would do, I would look at my cases, and I would ask myself, do I want to have a conversation? Will I be able to impress my examiner in a conversation on preeclampsia with severe features? Answer, yes. Then I say, do I feel I can impress my examiner in a conversation of hyperemesis? My answer is yes. So I want to get both conversations going. So now, I think a little bit, and I want you folks to do the same kind of process. The probability is that you have additional cases on your case list with preeclampsia with severe features. If that's not the case, then make this case primarily your severe preeclampsia case. But if you've got other cases on your case list, try and get the preeclampsia conversation going on those other cases so you minimize the preeclampsia in this particular case. And once you've minimized the preeclampsia in this particular case, then take the hyperemesis and try and maximize it, blow it up a little bit by saying severe preeclampsia, comma, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, multiple etiologies considered. Once the examiner reads multiple etiologies considered, you're virtually guaranteed that the question's coming, what are the etiologies? What's the differential diagnosis for hyperemesis? So, you know, it's up to you. You folks have to decide which conversations do you want to have. And based on that, you determine which issues you embellish. And you should never be dishonest. You don't have to be dishonest here. I'm not encouraging you ever to be dishonest. But you can embellish a few things and emphasize a few things, certainly by the way you word the case. So that's what I would do in that situation. Again, Paige, does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Any other questions that you might have?
No, I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay, you're more than welcome. Okay, Tina, we're on to you. Thank you for being patient. So again, I've got your questions in front of me in the email that you sent to my office. But let's take them one by one. Go ahead and pose your questions so that everyone listening in can follow.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to discuss a gynecology case to ensure that I am listing and describing everything concisely. And so I have a 47-year-old G5P5 with AUB who failed medical management. I did a robotic-assisted total hysterectomy. During the case, there was concern for a possible bowel trocar injury. And so I consulted gynecology oncology, who did a FSLAP and bowel exploration. They did not find a bowel injury. She was diagnosed with a bowel mesenteric defect and ecchymosis. The patient was discharged in stable condition, but later was readmitted for a post-op pelvic abscess. She received antibiotics, a drain was placed by interventional radiology, and her symptoms improved, and she was discharged in stable condition with antibiotics and close follow-up.
Yeah, I think the way you've presented it is great. I would just encourage you, when it comes to writing it down on paper, try and, if possible, and I'm not sure it's very easy, but if possible, cut down on the number of words that you write down to describe the case. But emphasize exploratory laparotomy. You want, maybe put that in capital letters. You want the examiner to see that. Because once they see that, they will ask, why did you do this? What happened? And then you get a beautiful discussion going. So the way you've presented it has been nice and succinct. Try and do that with the number of words that you write down on the cases as well. Now, folks, every single one of you, I should say 99% of you, have complications on your cases. The natural tendency is to be depressed, upset, anxious, guilt-laden, I screwed up, what am I going to say in the exam? And none of those emotions or thoughts are appropriate. It's a completely different situation. a case like this is actually, from the exam point of view, a magnificent case. Why? Because you know, A, you're going to get a conversation on it, and you can also work out what that conversation is going to comprise of. So if you see exploratory laparotomy and you're the examiner, the first thing you're going to ask is what happened. And then you're going to describe, I thought I had a trocar injury, at which point they will say, well, tell me, why did you think you may have had an injury? What were the symptoms that you were getting or the signs you were seeing that made you think that? And then they may well go on to ask you, describe for me your technique of varied needle insertion and trocar insertion. The examiner is looking to make sure that this complication did not occur because of you, but despite you. These things happen to everyone. Your examiners have probably had these kind of complications. It can happen to anyone. It's just tough that you have the complication in the year of collecting cases, but it can happen to anyone. So I've mentioned this before a month or two ago in a previous teleseminar. Basic principles that you want to keep in mind regarding questions they can ask you on any complication on your case list. The first one is, and folks, those of you at home, you actually might want to even write this down so you don't forget it. Typically, it's on the GYN side, but not always. They may ask, at what point in the surgery did you notice the complication? Okay. How did it present? What made you think of it? Okay. What are the causes for this kind of complication? And what do you think was the cause in your particular case? And in answering all these questions, just be totally, totally open and honest. Then the next question is, okay, you had this complication, fine. What did you do about it? How did you manage it? How did you treat it? Now, in this particular case that Tina presented, you got GYN oncology as an intraoperative consult. That's totally fine. But just be aware, because you called in GYN onc, doesn't mean to say they can't ask you any other further questions. They can still ask you, what did you suppose the GYN onc was looking for? Is it necessary to run the bell? How would you run the bell? These are all legitimate questions. If the GYN onc found a laceration to the small bowel, how might he or she repair it? How might he or she repair it if it's a longitudinal incisional laceration versus a transverse incisional laceration to the small bowel? These are legitimate questions. They can even go so far as to ask you, if you found a longitudinal laceration into small bowel and no GYN onc were available, and it's really not realistic because if GYN onc's not available, general surgery certainly is, but they can still ask the question, if no one is available for you, how would you go about repairing this incision? What layer, they can ask all of the stuff. And by the way, folks, they can easily ask you these questions that I'm going to pose right now as a structured case. So all of you should be able to answer this question. How many layers would you close in? What would each layer comprise of? For example, mucosa or submucosa or muscularis layer or serosa? And which suture material would you use for each layer and why? And what stitch type would you use for each layer and why? When I say stitch type, I'm talking, would you use a continuous interrupted locking, non-locking mattress, whatever the case may be? You've got, these are all fair questions that they can ask you. And then once you've described how you would manage the case, the last question, which is really the cherry on the top, which is fantastic if you can offer it without even being asked it, is you can say, as a consequence of this case, I now do X or Y or Z to avoid a potential recurrence of this kind of complication. In other words, what have you learned from this case where you had the complication? What have you learned that you can reduce the risk of a similar complication in the future? And by adding that component, you're showing the examiner that as you move along in your career, you're becoming a safer and a better surgeon. And it leaves the examiner with a very comfortable feel about you. So, Tina, I've done a lot of talking. Does what I've said answer your question?
Yes, it does. I did have a question about the number of nights in the hospital that I had listed. Would
sure.
I just add together the two admissions?
Don't do that. It's actually not true. It's far better to do the following. You write the number of days that she spent in. You present the whole case for the first admission. Pretend there wasn't any second admission. Just the whole case as it is for the first admission. Then in the complications column, that's where you write POD, post-op day, hashtag number 6, whatever it is. Infection or febrile illness admitted for workup and treatment. And the reason why I say admitted for workup and treatment, because when the examiner reads that, they're going to want to ask you, well, how did you work her up? What was your differential? And what treatment did you give? So the second admission, everything relating to the second admission, let me rephrase, everything that you feel is relevant to mention in the second admission goes in the complications column of the original admission. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and one other question that's really an obvious question, and I'm not going to go into the details. We've discussed this many times in the past. Be prepared for them to ask you what antibiotics did you give and why. Totally fair question for this kind of case. Tina, is that it on your end, or do you have any other questions?
I have one more question about this case. With her flap insertion, she later developed a hernia that Jen on.
Sorry, with what? I didn't hear the first part. With her something insertion, I think you said that, didn't you? With her what?
With the exploratory laparotomy insertion, she developed
incision,
a hernia.
Incision, yeah.
And Jen Ong took her back to the operating room to repair the hernia. Do you think this is something I need to have listed in the complications as well?
So you, this is time I would discuss it. I would be very comfortable to have a conversation on hernia. Now, just let's assume for the moment that 90% of you listening in don't feel that way. So if you feel that you're not comfortable with that, minimize this issue. And I still think there's a sort of an obligation to put it down, but you can minimize it. You can write minor hernia, something that minimize it. But I would actually far rather, if you are comfortable, have you spend 5 minutes reading up on the basic principles of hernia. And then maximize it. Try and get that conversation going. And then you get the opportunity to impress your examiner. And I'll just tell you right now, the question that you've got to be prepared to answer if you've got a hernia is, number one, what is a hernia? And it's basically a connection between one cavity and another. What is the treatment? It's to excise the connection and the epithelial tract, and then to put as many layers of adjacent tissue between the two cavities to reduce the risk of a recurrence. And there are different techniques. There's the vest and pants technique. There's mesh. There's a lot of different options. But just know the basic principle. This is not a general surgery exam. So if they were to ask you anything on hernia, which I got to tell you, folks, it's a fair question. We are surgeons. We can be exposed to this. We're abdominal pelvic surgeons. We can get this. So it's not an unfair question. So I encourage you to read up a little bit on it. Be able to say something on it. Because if you can say anything, it's probably more than what the examiner is expecting of you. So you've got a choice. You can either minimize it if you're dogmatic that you don't want to get involved in that conversation. Any other alternative, I would embellish it and maximize it for the reasons that I've discussed. Does that make sense to you, Tina?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Any other questions on your end?
If I did 2 gynecology surgeries on a patient in the diagnosis category, should I just put like status post hysteroscopy DNC and then in the treatment
so
I can
what,
put like, hysterectomy?
What so this is an important question. What were the 2 surgeries that she had?
Hysteroscopy DNC, polypectomy.
Yeah.
And then the second was a total hysterectomy.
Okay. The dominant, the major surgery is the hysterectomy. So write the case up as if it was only the hysterectomy. And then in the pre-op diagnosis column, okay, put down DNC hysteroscopy and polypectomy. Alternatively, you can put that all down in the treatment column, because the certainly the DNC and polypectomy were parts of the treatment. Just put it before the hysterectomy. Make sure that everything that appears in the treatment column is listed in chronological order, going as you read down that column. Okay. Does that make sense to you, Tina?
Yes.
Just put it all in the pre-op diagnosis column or the workup column, and that's fine. Okay. Folks, we're almost done. I just want to share with you, we're approaching the end of caseless collection. You really want to be at this point in time, within a week of having managed the patient, it's already entered into your cases. Now, I know probably 50% of you listening in are not that far along, but you want to try and get there, because you want to, once June 30th comes around, you want to be able to finish off your cases as soon as possible. And I would love you to do it in 2 weeks. Many of you will not accomplish this, but the sooner the better, because number one, once you've finished your case list, you really should take a well-deserved, guilt-free 4 or 5 day exam holiday. Forget about the exam for 4 or 5 days. Give yourself a break. It's good psychologically. You've got a major chunk of the effort behind you, and you deserve a break. And I want you to build in 5 days or so to be able to take that exam vacation. And then when you come back, I want you to start concentrating on defending your case list and oral exam technique. The whole flavor of your preparation changes. And I want you to get to that point of starting oral exam technique and practicing talking, practicing by having mock oral exams with anyone and everyone as soon as possible. It will put you in a very powerful position. So that's the first point I wanted to mention. The second point is, if by this time I'm pretty sure virtually all of you have attended our cases construction course, but if you haven't yet done so, if you're a new attendee, I want to strongly encourage you to do this, because once you listen to and watch that cases construction course, it'll change your entire perspective on how to construct your cases. It'll give you a beautiful insight, and it'll really make a big difference for you folks. So I want you to encourage you to do that. And the last thing is to just share with you that our next teleconference will be on the 28th of June, which is 2 weeks from now. 28th of June, we'll do this all over again. Again, I would ask you, please share with your colleagues. If they're taking exams, have them come and join us. And I want to encourage you to volunteer to be in the hot seat and to submit any questions or concerns or cases that you've got regarding the exam. A quick question. Paige, are you still there with us? Paige?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Very briefly, and be honest, did you find the experience to be, or let me ask you, how did you find the experience being in the hot seat and discussing your case with me? Be honest.
It was very comfortable. It wasn't a lot of pressure, and it answered questions that I had about my case list.
You pleased that you submitted the case for discussion?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. And Tina, how about you? Same question goes to you.
I agree. I found it to be really useful.
Okay, thank you very much. And for folks, for the rest of you listening in, I asked them, because I want to make sure I'm doing a good job, but I want you folks to hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, of what it's like to present these cases for subsequent teleconferences. So if you've got questions, if you've got concerns, feel free. This is what I'm here for, and I'm happy to do it. I will also just tell you, our first definitive board prep course will be happening, I think, in the second week of July. It's going to be in Baltimore. So if you're thinking of attending, again, I will just share this with you. If you're thinking of attending, and I'm obviously biased, but I honestly and genuinely believe it's very, very helpful. I encourage you folks to attend as soon as possible. Firstly, attend a live in-person course if you can. It's preferable to watching it over Zoom because it's very difficult to sit behind a TV screen for 8 hours a day with all the distractions that's going on in your home, etc. It's far preferred, if you can, to come to a live in-person course. And we're having the first one in Baltimore. And if you're planning on coming, the sooner you come, the sooner you'll get this insight into how to present, and the longer the amount of time you will have before your exam to practice what you learned. So I always encourage people to come sooner rather than later. And the first one will be, we've got two in Baltimore, two in Los Angeles, and they run from the middle of July to early September. I think that's the duration. So over roughly 2 months. So come as soon as you can. I think you'll find it very, very helpful. Alrighty, to Paige and Tina, thank you so much for volunteering. For the rest of you, thanks for joining. And we'll do this all again in 2 weeks' time on the 28th of June. Thank you so much, folks. This then concludes our teleconference. All the best. Bye-bye.